In recent years, the only way most Americans could visit Cuba legally was to travel with an educational or humanitarian group. But in the last couple of months, the U.S. government has banned nearly all of these trips. Now, our own Steve Paulson made it to Cuba just under the wire. So, Steve, how'd you get there?
Well, I went on a trip sponsored by the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee's Institute of World Affairs, and there was a humanitarian component as well. Many American cities have sister city relationships with Cuba, and our group delivered humanitarian supplies to Milwaukee's sister city, a small city called Nuevitas.
Now, I understand you had briefings with officials at both the Cuban Foreign Ministry and the U.S. Interests section. Was there anything surprising to you about those visits?
Well, they both blamed the embargo on the other side, just as Annie Bardak was talking about in the last interview. I have to say, one of the things that really struck me was just the setting of the U.S. Interests section, and I think it shows how convoluted the politics can get. The interest section is in the building that used to be the U.S. Embassy before the revolution. It's now owned by the Swiss government, which leases it to the U.S. In other words, it's the American embassy in all but name. And the U.S. interest section is surrounded by Cuban soldiers, and our Cuban guide wouldn't come within two blocks of the place. And then right across the street, there is a big anti-imperialism park that the Cuban government has built honoring Elian Gonzalez, the shipwreck boy who was sent back to Cuba. And there are big demonstrations protesting American policy right across the street from the one official U.S. establishment.
I'm curious to know what it's like around the city. We all know Fidel Castro rules Cuba. Are there public monuments celebrating Castro?
You know, that was one of the surprises for me. There were actually very few public images of him, statues or posters or even postcards. He does not have the cult of personality that you often associate with dictators. The image that you see everywhere is that of Che Guevara. And when you think about it, it kind of makes sense. It's a lot easier to celebrate a dead martyr than the guy who is there, who's largely responsible for the rather grim living conditions today.
So is the revolution still celebrated?
Very much so. And you see lots of public monuments commemorating the revolution. And you also see lots of weaponry. For instance, at the University of Havana, there's this beautiful grassy square, and there's a tank sitting right there. And just to give you one other example, at Che's mausoleum in the town of Santa Clara, there's an enormous statue of Che, and he's in combat fatigues toting a rifle.
But I understand that they have relaxed some things. The Cuban government has, for instance, relaxed some of its restrictions on religion, right?
Yeah, well, from what I heard, the Catholic Church operates with fewer restrictions now, and an Afro-Cuban religion has started to come out of the closet. Santeria is the best-known tradition, and you'll sometimes see people on the street dressed totally in white. They are being initiated into Santeria, which originally was brought over by the Yoruba of Nigeria. And this became the religion of the slaves in Cuba. And today, Santeria is known for its gods that have very close connections to nature. For instance, there's Chango, the god of thunder. There's also a goddess of the sea and motherhood and a goddess of love and fresh water, just to name a few examples.
So where do you go to see the trappings of Santeria?
Well, there's a fascinating street in Havana called Hamel Alley, which celebrates Afro-Cuban religion. It has huge murals of these gods on the walls and the sides of buildings, and it's really quite stunning. The paintings are by the Cuban artist Salvador Gonzalez Escalona. And when I was there, I talked with the painter's assistant, Elias Asef Alfonso, and he told me that the practitioners of Santeria have had to deal with a lot of negative stereotypes.
People thought that the religion, it was black magic, witchcraft, or something for black people. But it's not true. It's part of our roots.
Tell me a little bit about that. Where does that thinking come from?
Because the slaves were poor people. And all the time, the Spanish government gave them a bad reputation because the Spanish, they were Catholic, and they thought that the religion of the slave came from the devil. And in Africa, they were cannibal. I don't know how to say in English. They eat people.
Cannibals.
But here in Cuba, it was different. But it depends on your mind, depends if you believe or not. Some people say the slave kill white people to give their gods. But maybe it's true, maybe it is not. But the intellectuals say that it was wrong. But now people think that with Afro-Cuban region, you can solve problems, and that's the most important.
Santeria also has its own musical tradition. Drums are particularly important. They are considered the voice of the gods. And when I was in Hamel Ali, I heard a performance by the group Iroso Upa. I also met a filmmaker who's made documentaries about various Afro-Cuban traditions. Her name is Gloria Rolando. She herself is part of the Santeria tradition. And she talked about the long history of discrimination that people of her religion have faced.
They had to hide. They had to hide many things, many rituals, many ceremonies. But something that is amazing, that in spite of all this discrimination and exploitation, is something that is still alive.
Now, as I understand it, when the Pope came to Cuba a few years ago, that opened up religious life a little bit here, and then Cuba officially changed from being an atheist state to a secular state, and it allowed for more religious expression. Has that made things easier for your tradition?
The Catholic Church were more open. They could celebrate the Christmas. They don't have to hide. But, you know, in the case of this culture, the African Church is considered like a culture of resistance. But you cannot hide the drums, and the drums and the music you could hear in the neighborhood. So
when you talk about the drums and all the music, that's really a part of religious expression.
See, because the drums is not just a musical instrument. They are deities. The drums have a secret that we call Anya, that is a deity, and they have their own roles in the worship.
And one thing that I've noticed as I've watched some of the dancing here in Cuba is it's very sensual often. And I'm wondering if there's actually a part of that in the spiritual tradition, unlike, say, in the Catholic Church, where there's this clear distinction between sex and religion.
This sexuality in the dance is, we are Caribbeans. And the Caribbeans, you see how hot here is the weather? Our dances must be hot also. Yes.